Om Shanti, thank you, Sister Nita. We are privileged to be here this morning to share our insights and experiences, mental health promotion.
Brother Francis, can you slow down a bit because of translators?
All right. Let me introduce the members of the panel. Our first member is Dr. Sarah Eager. She's from the United Kingdom. She worked as a consultant psychiatrist for over 30 years and is now retired. So she's a long-standing member of the mental health core team for Brahmakumaris. Dr. Sarah. Sister Pamela Donnellan is from Australia. She is a qualified counselor, mentor, and educator. She has been a Brahmakumari student for 45 years. Sister Mary Jean is from Canada. She has formal training as a psychiatric nurse and has been active for more than 32 years in mental health and psychiatry. She's part of the International Teacher Training Team for Living Values. She's a facilitator of the True Self-Esteem Program. She's now 29 years in Gyan. Sister Roma Lachan is a psychologist with training in clinical and counseling psychology. She currently works as a university student counselor and has over 10 years' experience working with children, adolescents, and adults experiencing mental unwellness and psychological challenges. She's 13 years in Gyan. I am Francis Mina. I work as a licensed counselor and I've been with Baba for 26 years. Okay. So, Baba always reminds us that it's very important to remain ever healthy, happy, and wealthy. And we know that health is a complex and multidimensional construct. Part of health is mental health. So today's panel will be a discussion. It's a presentation of personal experiences and insights on the process and dynamics of mental health according to our panel members' expertise. So each panel member will be presenting for about 5 minutes. So we start off with Dr. Sarah. Oh, sorry. We start with Sister Mary Jean. My apologies.
Om Shanti. Good morning, and thank you, Brother Francis. So Mary Jean, and I've been in Gyan for about 29 years, and I've worked as a psychiatric nurse for 32 plus years. Had to think. And so this topic of mental health and well-being is something that is of a human condition. So we all have a health status. And then what we're discussing today is about the mental health, so how I think, how I feel. And keeping in mind the audience, which is you and I and everyone here, as Baba's students and children. And so in my experience for my Brahman life, is I found that Baba's knowledge really helped me in serving others. It helped me make sense of the sorrows of the world and the crises that people would navigate through. But as a meditator, as a Raj Yogi student, feeling the feelings, recognizing those negative thoughts and those uncomfortable emotions sometimes can be difficult. Is there... I had a thought to ask a question, sort of anecdotal. I'm sure everyone here has experienced uncomfortable emotion. And for me, early on in my spiritual study with Raj Yoga, I thought that once I learned to meditate and meet God, that I shouldn't feel sorrow or have negative thoughts. But those feelings were still there. And so, there's many ways to cope with those negative emotions, those negative thoughts. Some ways is to talk about it, other ways is to contain it, push it away, avoid it. Over time, when we have experiences like that and we ignore it, it creates dis-ease in the body, in the mind, but for the soul, it creates the sorrow. And so then it makes it really difficult to meditate. So that's one side, that's one part of it. Now I'm going to go over to the physical body. Now, the physical body is like the vehicle, right? There's organs, there's the central nervous system that makes this instrument of the body work. Sometimes that instrument, some of the functions of it aren't working properly. So the glands of the body and the nervous system are out of balance. So how does that impact someone or anyone so some of the symptoms or some of the thoughts that come to mind are low energy. Has anyone here experienced where you have no energy, where you're tired, where you can't quite focus and concentrate? Yeah, lots of hands, lots of nods. And then what are my thoughts like when I'm in that state? We automatically go to. So check with yourself. Does my thought go, I'm tired, I'm hungry, I need some rest? Or does it go to, what's wrong with me? It must be because of this, because of that. So we go running around looking for a reason. And then, what are the quality of my thoughts? And so then, that can get quite low. That can get to that point of sadness, depressed state, hopelessness, no desire to engage in your life or connect with others. And if that feeling, so those are feelings, and if that feeling lasts for any length of time, 2 weeks or more, we call that depression. And it's a temporary state, but for some it can last a really, really long time. The good news is there's ways to come out of the depression. There's ways to start talking about our feelings or feeling our feelings and recognizing the quality of our thoughts. And sometimes when we go back to the biology of the body, we need to look at it from a medical perspective and consider whether you need to see a doctor. Is there something physical going on that's lending itself or making me feel this way? And so I think the key thing that I want to say right now before I pass the mic on is there's hope. When you feel tired, fatigued, and if it falls into sadness, depressed, avoidance, not coping, not feeling like you're coping, there's medication, there's support, and there's ways to change our thinking so that we can feel better. Thank you.
So thank you, Sister Mary Jean. She surfaced to us how we as BKs should also pay attention to our thoughts and feelings, not just because we're meditating that we are immune to mental health distress, but to pay attention to the symptoms as they present themselves. She did already introduce slightly about looking into the biological components, which Dr. Sarah will help us better understand.
Thanks very much, Frances. I think this session we decided just each of us would share for a few minutes what we're noticing in the family and from our perspective what we're learning, what we can share that might help. And then at the end we might ask each other questions, but also if you have some questions, we want to leave some time. So especially if anyone's saying anything, if you could write down if you have a question as we go along, so that we can have a good discussion. And I think for myself, you know, Baba uses very broad phrases and we kind of have to unpack them. You know, so he says things like, don't take sorrow, don't give sorrow. I mean, and it's just an enormous learning and understanding that goes with that very simple statement. And for me, I think a lot of what the mental health world is helping us do is understand ourselves. Like when he says, be a self-sovereign, for me that is understanding your own feelings, your own background, your own emotional state, your own thought patterns. And this is where Western psychology can help us a lot. And it's very interesting to watch how the whole psychological world, there are so many models out there, and I think, you know, we can learn something helpful from each of them. But it is interesting to observe how they're starting to come back to a spiritual model as well, that they realize you can look at things on a body level, a brain level, a thought level, a mind level, but that that aspect of really what is our true nature and how can you use that to heal yourself is becoming more incorporated into those therapies. And I feel for us we can use a lot of those therapies to understand ourselves deeper and help ourselves. And then we have the added ingredient of putting Baba and all his knowledge on top. So it's very powerful and helpful. So rather than seeing them as separate things, I think for us they really go together very nicely. And as a lot of you know, I've been very interested in the self-compassion work, which I feel also integrates lots of different theories. But one in particular that I've noticed, especially this trip, is what's called an emotional regulation system. Again, it's just a model, and all these ideas are maps, if you like. The territory is your experience. It's what's going on inside you. So all these maps can be helpful, but they're not the whole truth. They're just people's attempts to try and understand how we work as human beings. So this model uses these three emotional regulation systems. The threat one, which I think people are very familiar with, fight, flight, and freeze. the doing one, which is activating, motivating, and the soothing one, which we experience a lot when we're meditating, when we're healing, deep breathing. Many, many techniques will activate the soothing system. But I've got a question to ask you. How many of you feel compelled every now and then, or quite frequently, to look at your mobile phone to see if you've got a message? Hands up. Who has that experience? They've got to check their phone. Be honest. You know, I think most human beings do, because that's what they're designed to do. They're designed to capture your attention. And the whole grip of social media, if you like, and I have to say, walking around Madaban everywhere, I'm quite amazed at the number of people who I see are on their phones. And this is the dopamine system. In a way, we are being, our brain is hijacked, being hijacked by the dopamine system. And this system really is very good. It drives our behaviour. It makes us feel motivated. But when we activate it, we get, it's the pleasure hormone, dopamine. So we get a sense of satisfaction. And if we've achieved something. So just checking our messages gives us a little dopamine hit. And it's highly addictive. Highly addictive. So when you feel you're being pulled to look at that, oh, have I just got a message? That is what it, the system it's operating on. But many other things also work with dopamine. So all our addictions, our relationship with food, our relationship with sex, sexual desires, any kind of addiction, it's the dopamine system. But also, I think it's connected, and this is important in healthcare professionals, it's connected to service, or what we say, burnout. When we just keep working and working, and you can do that in healthcare very easily, there are always more patients to see, but you can also do that in service. You can just keep doing service, service, service. And what's driving that behaviour? When Baba says, keep a balance, it's probably this dopamine system that you get satisfaction from achieving something. But it's really, in the long term, not operating from your highest self, from that compassionate self, that loving self, our true nature, our original sanskars. Which is why you need to really start noticing that behaviour. And a lot of, in the self-compassion world, we start with name it to tame it. So the first step is noticing our feelings and being able to give them a name. And then, and feel it to heal it. So we can feel our emotions in the body in many different ways, but we're not very good at that language. So we need to, and then when we can name it or we can feel it, we can then hand it over to Baba or ask for Baba's help or use many, many different strategies to manage it. But I think this is what I'm noticing in the family is these questions. How do we keep this balance of service and yoga and not get too busy? We're kind of addicted to busyness. And often, when we're in that kind of behaviour, it's an early childhood pattern that might be driving that behaviour, that we're really doing the service because we need approval or we need love or we need attention or something that was happening in our family, our Lokic family. It's a pattern we've developed from a very young age. So it's useful to be able to look at those things as well. So I think as a mental health team, each of us have brought certain skills and we are trying to help the family on this path of self-sovereignty, understand and manage our own feelings and our own suffering, our own distress, our own sorrow, so we can truly be in that place of not giving sorrow and not accepting sorrow. Om Shanti.
Thank you, Dr. Sarah. Dr. Sarah just also emphasized how the feelings we have, they strongly have a biological component, and part of those as well is being able to identify and to name the feelings as they manifest in our body, which can be very helpful in our journey because we might not be realizing it. We may have some addictive behaviors or perhaps some fluctuations in our mood, just like what Sister Mary Jean said. And these are some realities which we meditators need to acknowledge, that we may have some experiences that may need some attention and intervention to help us better understand what interventions or activities we can pursue to improve or sustain our mental health. Sister Pamela will take the lead.
Greetings and hello, fellow travelers on the path of being human. So I'm going to sort of try and be vulnerable and tell you my story as well, because I think mental health specialists secretly went and learnt mental health because they wanted to understand themselves first. So just be sure that I didn't think I had any mental health for the first 25 years in my Brahmin life. I thought, I'm a Santawasi. I'm very pure, and I'm here to teach other people. Until chaos came into my heart and mind, and I realized I needed some help. So the first gift I got from Baba when I arrived 45 years ago was a pen, and on that pen it read, "To feel is to fail." Oh dear. I'd spent the first 6 weeks in Baba's room crying, so I had fully failed as I arrived. And then I discovered that there's such a thing called a psychological injury. And because my childhood was very difficult, there was a lot of domestic violence, there was parents that had experienced a lot of sadness, and so they were trying to bring up us three girls, and they weren't doing such a great job. So when I came to Baba at 19, I brought with me a little bag of injuries. So one of the big injuries was that when I met people who were a little bit bossy and who didn't see me, I felt devastated, and I would react. And I would react in the way Sarah explained, with fight. So if anyone treated me with a little bit of disrespect, I would give it right back. So people became quite scared of me. I was a scary person. So when after several years, people started to feed back, "Oh, you're a bit scary, you're a bit pushy, you're a bit this, you're a bit that," I had to ask the question, why? Why was I, who someone was injured, now injuring other people? This was such a beautiful question that I had the opportunity to ask myself. So I started searching and asking other people who knew more than me about this. And then as I started to heal and explore my family of origin, and I'm going to call this the inner landscape of the self, that we have a country within us. We have valleys, we have mountains, we have little parts of us that are frozen, parts of us that feel angry and unseen and unheard. And once I understood that, I started revealing those things to Baba in meditation, to my close friends, and I started to ask for help. And my life turned around. So I went and started to study, but even as a Brahmin, I thought I knew everything. So when I was in the school of psychology, in my mind I was thinking arrogantly, these people don't understand, I've got the knowledge. Yet I still suffered a lot of hurt and anger. So once I realized to take the label of being a BK off and put the proper human being, I'm a human and I have a whole human experience to live a whole life, I started to see others as human. And I started to love and accept others as they were and respect the journey, the emotional journey that we are all on. So as BKs, when I see, because most of my clients or people that I journey with in this exploration of healing, They tell me things that remind me of my own story. So it's nothing new. So if anyone is suffering out there and you feel you need to see somebody who's humble and kind and empathetic and experienced, it's really okay. Nothing scary will happen. So if you are somebody who needs help, please take it, because you can waste many years pretending that you're okay when actually you need someone to love and listen to you and hear you and see you. And then after that, you start to be able to let Baba in deeper. You know, Baba can't be with us if we're pretending to be okay. It just doesn't work. That's my experience. So some of the client, and another thing, you know, we get told, hey, you've got to become perfect. Here, follow celibacy. I mean, do we get a little booklet on how to follow celibacy? No, we don't. And when I came into Gyan, I was 19 years old. I was hormonally fully young and ready to procreate children. And I used to wonder why I was going so crazy, experiencing all these different sexual experiences, but no one helped me. So again, this is something you can really come to understand, that we are yogis practicing something that's very interesting and beautiful. It's not something that's forced on you. It's not something you have to pretend. So I think we need to give up the life of pretending and really get into being vulnerable with ourselves and with people we can trust, and really learn to understand that feeling is not failure. As Sarah said, when you identify a feeling, you can then start to self-soothe that feeling, and start to really take care of yourself emotionally. So a lot of the clients, the BK friends I see, suffer from things like deep self-worth, not believing in themselves. They suffer from sometimes sexual addiction. They suffer sometimes from not understanding how to help their distorted thinking, or feeling that, you know, they don't have any power in their life because they think that it's the center that has to give them power, or some sister has to give them permission to do something. So what I learned very early on is that my life is in my hands, and whatever I need, whatever I want to achieve, I can actually go and do that, try and find ways to do that. So I'm saying this as a 40-year-old Brahmin who's had to really learn those lessons and go on a journey of self-discovery, and feel no shame about being really who I am to be able to get healthy. So I encourage everyone to embrace their mental health as a beautiful discovery, to find out how to heal the little wounded injuries that we all carry. And I think that's about it. Thank you.
It's interesting that we're able to surface this, because there are just some experiences we have which throughout our life as BKs, we've sort of suppressed. To feel is to fail. Not to think, to just obey. Always say haji. Turn away from your low kicks. Without really clearly understanding, all of these instructions given to us have caused some of us anguish. And we don't want anguish in our experience as meditators. And perhaps it's very interesting to continuously introspect and to recognize these feelings, which often we fight, often we struggle against. So Sister Roma will help us sift through, look at ways we could deal with them and cope with them. Sister Roma, please.
Om Shanti, good morning. So yesterday a memory came back to me from my later childhood, adolescence. So I remember I grew up in a very religious family, very traditional East Indian heritage, you know, conventional type family, old thinking parents. And my birth order in a very large family meant that my thinking style was very different. My worldview was very different. This right to advocate, the right to have equal opportunities as my brothers, and you know, all of that education was very unique to me. And so one day, some conflict happened in the home between my mother and I. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go to the pundit. in the temple, and I'm going to talk about it. And so afterwards, my mother said, you know, don't tell anybody about your problems. So at this very young age, I looked at her and I said, well, I don't think that's great advice. So it kind of made sense that I later became a psychologist. But the path to becoming a psychologist was one that if I couldn't talk to other people about my problems, and I have all these questions about myself, and I couldn't talk to the religious leader about it, and how was I going to learn about me? Because the information I was getting from those around me, my older sisters, my parents, was that whatever I was thinking or feeling was not important, and it didn't deserve any further investigation. So I was one of those souls who went into psychology to learn about me. And I spent a few years just really thinking about myself, trying to understand why I was so different and all of those things. And then eventually I got the feedback that, you know, there were some hidden skills, so I progressed to becoming trained as a psychologist. So the first real experience, a profound experience of emotions for me was, as Sister Pat said, to feel is to fail. And while doing my studies at the university, I came into Baba's knowledge. And Baba's knowledge is so intoxicating. He gives us so much support, so much love, that Brahman life makes us feel strong. So by 2015, when my mother died, when my mother left body, I was at my strongest, because I understood that she did not die. She has finished playing her part with me. I understood attachment, I understood our connection, and I understood that, you know, the cycle will repeat and I'll have her as a mother in this life again. At the same time, I was not living at home in Trinidad, I was in the US. And coming back for the funeral and all of the rites that took place for a couple of weeks and going back to finish up my internships and all of that, I spent a lot of time with a family in Michigan, BK family. Anybody from Michigan, USA here today? No? I received incredible support from the BK family. And it was a kind of love that, even though my mother was not there, that center coordinator, Lakshmi Ben, filled that space. It was incredible. So I did not miss, I did not yearn, I did not want for, and like I said, I was spiritually strong. So I took every support I needed from Baba. And so I'm going through this journey of Western knowledge, and I'm also going through the spiritual journey of Baba's knowledge. In 2021, during the COVID pandemic, my sister left body at the age of 41. She was just a few years older than me at that time. And within that 9-year period, I experienced multiple losses. And as my family dwindled in size, because I come from a large family, I realized that there was this growing conflict inside of me. I started to feel things and experience things in the body that even meditation, even Baba's support, was not putting out that fire. And so oftentimes I would sit and a lot of guilty feelings would come up, because I'm an older student now. I'm not supposed to feel, I'm supposed to be beyond these things. And earlier, where I could take support from the family, I was unable to do so because the shame. How would I go and tell my BK family in Trinidad I'm not doing very well? How can I tell my colleagues as a psychologist I'm challenged with my emotions, right? It just brought up a lot of shame for me. And so I kept it all inside. In the past 2 years, an interesting relationship started to happen between me and this physical body. A number of things started to affect the body, and I couldn't understand what was going on, and I decided that I am going to develop a relationship with this body. And if we can think about our vehicles, most of us may drive or own a vehicle. And it's actually the first lesson, the body is a vehicle. If we run into some problem with this vehicle, what do we do? Leave it to the side of the road? Leave it in the garage, never use it again? Or do we start to investigate what is going on? Why is this body not cooperating? What karmic accounts is coming up? How can I settle it? And in doing that, I realized that the more I became in touch with my feelings, the more I begin to heal myself. And so using Baba's knowledge, I know that I have all of those powers. He has already given me all of his treasures, but I was not using it in a way that I can begin to make peace with this body. I can begin to understand what was happening with this body. So the lesson that I had learned earlier, that to feel is to fail, that deterred me from taking support, I learned another lesson in a statement that I heard during that journey. To feel is to heal. To feel is to heal. And so when we begin to think about mental health, wellness, stability, the very core of mental health depends largely on our ability to recognize feelings as they emerge, to be able to understand deeply what is this feeling that has come up, what message does it have for me. And I usually tell my clients to think of our feelings as postmen, right? Oh, so the postman has delivered anger today. Why? Open that letter. What is written in that letter? And if you find that the page is blank, now sit down and write, oh, my anger visited me today. My shame visited me today. My sorrow emerged. What is it trying to tell me? Where in this body does it come up? And so when we can recognize and understand those feelings, how unique it is, then we can begin to think about, well, what do I need to do with this particular feeling, this particular illness, or this particular problem to be able to heal and move forward? But it wasn't a smooth journey those 2 years, because now I'm thinking, okay, now Baba says be bodiless, time is near, don't be so attached to the body, why am I sitting thinking this pain, this pain, this pain, right? So a great deal of confusion started to come up as well. You know, how do I now integrate Baba's knowledge with what I'm experiencing, both physically in the body and also my Western knowledge? And so I again, you know, got myself to a place where I said, okay, I'm going to talk to one sister. And so I reached out to a sister, very beautiful soul, who guided me to understanding that, you know, everything we experience, whether we call it karma or as Western knowledge and science and research is telling us, our body stores data. And that data usually sits in our body as information of illnesses. So anger, ulcers in the stomach, right? So when we think about the body, my conclusion is that I have to take care of this vehicle. As much as Baba says, remain soul conscious and not be attached, for me to be able to transform and become karmatit, I have to understand what I feel, experience, and need to settle while I am in this body. And so our bodies are a beautiful but highly complex instrument. And there are so much biological systems that we do not understand, that we're not conscious of, that is constantly working and reworking, because this body is designed to protect us and for our survival. So as my sisters before me mentioned, fight and flight, what is that? Our nervous system says there is some danger. And now I need to either put on my running shoes and run away quickly, or I stay in the corner of the ring, put on my boxing gloves, and I'm prepared to fight back. So our body does things that we don't always understand. So going back to that point of feeling and mental health, when we take that time in meditation or just sit quietly with ourselves and the awareness of what we're experiencing in this body, we do that service of taking care of this instrument so that we can become who we need to become. Oftentimes, I wonder if sometimes we use gyan as an avoidance strategy to actually run away from our emotional responsibilities to ourselves and others. So sometimes I get so frustrated, I say, Baba, that's your child. You deal with it. Or sometimes a situation is too much, and I say, I'm not dealing with this. I'm detached from this. Not my problem. But then I have failed to serve firstly myself, because I promised to be Baba's instrument, and I've also failed in serving other souls. So Baba's knowledge is very unique, but as long as we live in this human body, that relationship between soul and body is also unique. So we have to honor that. So when you sit with your feelings, two really important terms comes up for me. Gentle curiosity. Be very gentle with yourself. Society has taught us to point fingers. Oh, I should not do this. This was bad. And we continue to hurt ourselves, and that becomes recorded, right? So gentle curiosity, what is coming up for me? And compassion. Love yourselves so much. Just like if a child falls down, we don't say, actually some of us do, but we shouldn't say, well, get up, you know, you look for that, it's your fault. We hug that child, we comfort that child, we say, oh, that must have hurt so much. And then we say, would you like to try again? So whatever you go through in your life, Brahmin life does not make us invulnerable. Baba said this morning, Maya comes. And I think Brahmin life is so unique that it gives us even more challenges. So as you look at the challenges that you experience in your life, as you go through those difficult feelings that make you vulnerable and scared and ready to run away, remember that you can also sit quietly with that gentle curiosity and that compassion. And experiment with that a little bit while you also take Baba's support. Yeah? And then give us feedback if that works. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Roma. We've heard from our four friends here on stage how on the individual level, mental health challenges can manifest and they work out. My role as a counselor, so it's my turn to share, I've always liked to observe people. We all came to Baba with a certain issue. We were tired, we were confused, we were in crisis. Then we sought solace from Baba's knowledge. Through the years, I've observed many BKs having different narratives. I should be this. I cannot be this. I have to be this. And these narratives, these stories which brothers and sisters in the knowledge enact, I find them very interesting because many of the narratives we are supposed to be living as students of Baba are causing anguish and difficulty. And that's opposite of the line of spirituality where we're supposed to integrate. But then again, I paid attention to my language. Must. I was expecting that spirituality must be like this. It must be like that. So, I find it interesting how many of us, as we try to live our narratives, are in our attempt to be happy, healthy, and holy, are getting sick, are getting tired, are getting angry. How many of us, how many among us do seva? I have all the energy to do seva. I love to do seva. When I do seva, all my sickness goes away. Let's all do seva. 2 days after, you get sick. Then seva comes again. Let's do seva. All, let's drop our work, let's take a leave. After 2 days, we get sick. And Dr. Sarah did mention that dopamine at work. You do something, your body feels rewarded. When we keep on doing something over and over again, we are forced to do it. Actually, what we're experiencing when we do seva is an adrenaline rush. There's this high. But we don't understand our bodies. We miss out on our meals. We don't take enough rest. We shortcut our routines. And many of us who do a lot of seva and this adrenaline rush happens over and over again, too much adrenaline builds up cortisol, which is a stress hormone. And when the body has so much cortisol, the body does not grow. Cortisol is responsible for fight and flight as a stress response. But in Brahma Kumaris, there's a different response. It's the fawn, F-A-W-N. The fawn response is the response to stress where I try to be behaved, I try to follow rules, I do everything to please people. And that's a different way to fight off stress. Either I attack the source of stress, I run away from the source of stress, or I try to court my way around stress. The problem there is, when I court my way around stress, I fawn. I sit in Baba's room, my problems don't go away. I eat another thali of bhojan. My problems don't go away. I do seva. My problems don't go away. I write a letter to Baba. My problems don't go away. So what's happening? Then we start thinking, is meditation for me? Is this the path for me? And I've, like what Sister Pam has mentioned, I've talked to BKs who struggle with their sexuality, who struggle with sex lust, who struggle with anger, who struggle with violence, to the point that they want to strangle the center niwasi. But then again, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do that. So I've always tried to understand, and that's why Sister is telling us to pay attention to your feelings. Like, what's my narrative as a BK? And many of us, our narrative is, I take it from my position, many of us are doing it to please other people, to please my fellow students, to please the center niwasi, because I've been a meditator for 15 years. I can't be angry. I'm a center niwasi. I'm not supposed to be late. I'm a kumari. I'm supposed to be like this. Or I'm a kumar. I'm supposed to be like this. So trying to understand the narrative takes time. And sometimes the narrative or the life story of Brahma Kumaris, I think, is it's very romanticized. It's not very accurate. We put an ideal to it. A meditator should be like this. A practitioner should be this. Should be alert, with eyes open, speaks less, softly and sweetly. Does not feel. Does not think. Don't think, Daddy said. Always says yes. Does not complain. So many narratives are planted on us, and we struggle with our own narratives. And I think the reason the panel is here is to help us not just understand the narrative which we are writing, because life is a drama, Baba is our director, and he is the scriptwriter. And our roles, as we are all actors, is to understand the narrative, not just my narrative, but also the narrative of others. Because in mental health, my mental health is strongly connected to your mental health, to sister's mental health. So if the center is toxic to my mental health, I might as well move away. Or if the center is toxic to my mental health, how does that challenge me? What variety or what newness do I bring into the center? So I feel that's the challenge for us Brahmins, because as Baba said, situations will become more complicated at the end. People will come to us for a glimpse of hope or perhaps a gesture of kindness. But if deep inside we struggle with our own issues and we cannot be kind to ourselves, we cannot be Baba's cooperative companion. So the next part of our discussion will be really more of an interaction of how we as students of Baba can take care of ourselves so that we can take care of each other, so that we can take care of the world. And that's always the process. We need to take care of ourselves as students so that we can take care of our fellow travelers, so that as ancestor souls, we can take care of the tree. All right, so I'll start with the question, and any of the members of the panel can answer. So, sisters, what do you think is the current challenge on mental health for BKs at the moment? So, just like when we had COVID, we had a public health infection challenge. Right now that it's a post-pandemic world and we're trying to get back together, and center setups have changed. Some are online, some are back in the center. What do you feel, or what have you noticed is the current challenge that Brahmins are experiencing, challenge or challenges that Brahmins are experiencing in their mental health?
The thought that comes to mind when you ask that question is connection. When you think of the pandemic and how lockdown, even the word lockdown, limited connection and isolated many of us from others and from our spiritual community physically, it opened up, the pandemic opened up the IT world, I call it the electronic world. Yeah. So it opened up other avenues to connect, but it kept us somewhat detached. And it was using the gadgets, the phone, the computer, and the exposure to that. I'm guessing Sarah has effects on the physical body in terms of the glands and the hormones and the impact on the nervous system. But are we truly connecting? Because on a Zoom class, I can show up in my PJs, pajamas. So when you ask the question, how is it impacting, I think what I'm seeing and what I've experienced both in the outside world and in the Brahmin family is the joy that people are happy to come back together. For myself, coming in contact with my international friends that I have, it's been wonderful. But do we still have the social skills? Do I still have the ability to come in close contact? Or is there fear of getting sick, fear of, or not knowing what to say, or not being able to come out of isolation? That's what comes to mind.
I think I already mentioned the whole technology engagement, and I guess it's just things that distract us from ourselves generally. And there are many, many things in the world that can distract us. So limiting your kind of, I call it, we can be input junkies, and we do like to be entertained and keep up with the news, but just to be able to control the input and really be in touch with yourself. So what I'm seeing is that I think people now really want to be authentic, you know, to be their real selves, and drop that kind of BK mask, if you like, of being a good yogi or whatever. And it's such a relief just to feel, oh, I can just be myself and be accepted and loved. And genuine relationships with each other. I think Charlie was talking about this the other day, where he was saying he really focuses on relationship now, and how we had a fear that, you know, are we becoming attached, and you know, we keep our distance because we were so frightened we were becoming attached. But we have to really emerge those sanskars of genuine love and care and concern for each other. And I've heard that a lot too, you know, that how we treat each other, the world really sees that. But when you feel that genuine love and concern, you feel it's coming from Baba. It's very sweet. So I feel authenticity. People want to be real, be themselves, be accepted, be loved for who they are. And that, in a way, the system, the kind of old-fashioned hierarchical systems of, like, I'm the boss and you do what I say, I just feel that way of leading is not appropriate anymore, and it just leads to division. Again, Charlie said a very interesting thing. He said, if you have an attitude in the leadership role you're in that I am the boss or I am this person in charge, you will always have people who will cooperate with you, but you will always have people who will resist you. So immediately that attitude creates division. And so wherever we are, and we're entrusted with the role of looking after others in Baba's name, we have to have that attitude of being a facilitator, empowering others, being humble, being a servant, not that I'm in control, that what I say goes, that I'm the boss, you have to do what I say. That is, I think, not working as a model of how we operate anymore. So I see that as a challenge at the moment as well, that change in style of really collaboration, sharing equality. People want to feel they're equal, they're not being looked down on.
I was, this word when Sarah was talking was coming up of self-efficacy and self-directiveness. Because when you join a group, which we have to admit, this we are a big part of a big group, and often it's the group agenda that I'm following. But there's this saying that a gardener lives the longest life. And I wonder why that is. And I think when I was about 28, I was living in the centre, and my bed was under the doorbell, and I couldn't sleep. So I started painting at night because I didn't want to just lay around having worries. So when I started to paint, I didn't realise I was starting to find a part of myself that was really quite wonderful, and I started to flourish in art. And then I started to study, and then I started to flourish and study. And then I had really beautiful things to offer other people. I started painting for other people. I started sharing the wisdom that I was learning with other people. And my days became really rich. I started to see nature. I started to see myself differently. So we have to be careful not just to be a group person and wait for the agenda to be given, but we have to think about what's going to make me flourish. And I have a friend in the audience here. She took up hatha yoga and walking. And we all noticed how her body just looked so healthy and happy, and her mind started to become really positive. So, you know, notice the things in each other that inspire you about how your friends are flourishing and what are they doing to make that happen. I am not a group. I am a person with a whole life. And when I began meditation all those years ago, I thought the world was going to end every 3 years. Oh, no, it'll definitely end in 3 years. Oh, my God, it's definitely going to end in 3 years. That's 45 years. If I hadn't have gone and done things that made me grow and flourish, I don't know what I would be here sitting right now. I think I'd be feeling pretty empty, lonely, because I was told, don't make friends as well. Now I have friends that I can cry in front of, I can speak my mind to, I can challenge, and I know that they won't turn away from me. That was like about 7 years of practicing being a good friend to my friends. So you usually can have 5 really close friends, 15 beautiful associates, 25 like nice contacts, and then you have the whole Brahmin family. You know, if I'm going to be a person who is supposedly going to this great world, I think I'm going to have to learn how to be a really trustworthy friend. So I'm going to have to learn how to listen well and not butt in like I did today with Sarah at breakfast. I'm going to have to learn how to ask lovely open-ended questions so that I can dig deeper into what my friend is really thinking if they need that support. And I'm going to have to learn how to say, hey, Sarah, when I interrupted you this morning and I checked in, she shared with me that, yes, she sometimes needs to follow through the thought right until the end. So that's information I found out this morning about Sarah. I need to pay attention to that, to be a good friend to her, and I want to be a good friend to Sarah because she can really teach me a lot. So how do I see the people around me? Am I flourishing in my life? Have I always wanted to be a potter, go and learn how to make a plate? It's not going to be the end of the world if you spend Saturday afternoon at the pottery class, giving yourself a little bit of freedom to enjoy. So really think about, who am I? What do I want to flourish in so that I become a really healthy, happy person for all those who love me and all those I love? And then, you know, I don't think I'm going to have to give a lecture. People are going to want to ask me, how did you become like that? What's going on for you? And when you give gyan, when it's requested, the gyan goes so deeply. It's not a lecture. I'm not trying to convert people. I'm just being that person who feels good and others want to drink from that Kool-Aid or whatever you want to call it. Thank you.
So I have a very simple relationship with Baba and a very simple lifestyle, way of thinking about things. So I have this nightly routine to prepare for sleep where I invite Baba and we have a little conversation. And so every night I lay down and I say, well, Baba, it was a good day or not so great day, but thank you. If you're ready for me to come back home now, it's okay. So one night I go through the routine and I say, Baba, you know, if you're ready for me, no problem. And this bright white light flashes in front of me. And instantly I feel this fear in my body. And I jumped up and I laughed and I said, you're not ready, right? I am nowhere near to ready. But I added the humor in because I know Baba always asks us, you know, if we're ready, and we say, yes, we're ready. And then he say, but are you ready? And now I say, no, I'm not ready. With the pandemic in particular, I think that is what happened. The pandemic was such a scary experience that it woke us up, being in that awareness that, oh, death is actually real. My stage is not fully prepared. And because we were confined and isolated and living with people for longer hours than we typically do, it brought about a lot of feelings that I think people were not able to confront. And so understanding the seriousness of that, I think people became more open to the idea of sharing. You know, my child is struggling with this, or I notice this one does this, or even I have a hard time. So I think that is what came out for me in terms of persons across the board, whether you are Brahmin or not, a real existential awakening that death can knock at any point in time. We're losing people by the numbers. We're unable to remain in touch or remain connected. So the other side of that is that with this awakening, who do we go to for support as Brahmins? Oftentimes we go to another Brahmin or a center sister, or maybe we're the one who are being sought out for support. And that in and of itself can be very scary. So help seeking, going to ask for help, and support, two sides of the same coin. Both very vulnerable experiences. For me to come to you and say, oh, sister, I'm not doing well. Or for someone to come to me and say, all of this is happening, I don't know what to do. So with regard to what's happening in the centers, I think since the pandemic, I've gotten a lot of feedback. Two things. People are either calling, they need support, mental health support. Or two, the center sisters are saying, so much is coming up and we're not equipped to deal with it. So I don't know if we maybe addressed a little bit about that, but that is what I noticed particularly coming up.
Would you like to give some advice?
Right. Yeah. So sometimes what feels scary, particularly about our emotions, are when we don't understand. And I've already spoken a little bit about, you know, nurturing that curiosity so that we can understand what we're going through and build that courage to face. Baba has already blessed us with the powers, right? So we need to learn how to use that in a gentle and compassionate way. If you are a support person at any center, someone who is usually sought out or someone reaches out to you, the scary thing is that we feel we're not equipped. You don't need a degree. You don't need any special skills to help someone. Everyone knows how to listen. Yeah, everyone knows how to sit and say, oh gosh, that must have been so hard for you. So it sounds simple, but actually it's incredibly difficult, right? But as Brahmins, you already have those skills in the forms of your values and virtues. You know how to sit with someone in an accepting way. You have the virtue of love. You have the virtue of patience. So no matter what a soul might be going through, you learn how to tolerate. You have those powers. You can accommodate. You can make some adjustments for that soul. And so you already have those powers, those values, and those virtues, right? So helping or providing support is not very difficult. So if you notice that fear, again, sit with that fear. Ask yourself, why is this coming up? What feels challenging? But remember that there's a reason the soul sought you out in the first place. Maybe something, some specialty of yours that, oh, they see you as a non-judgmental person. Maybe they're also aware of some similar struggle you've gone through. So be mindful that, you know, we do already have those powers. At some point, in some instances, a person may present an issue that is really beyond your capacity to help. So in cases of serious mental health, or if you feel, oh, you know, I think this is a little bit too serious for me, then there is the BK Advisory Committee that you can refer to, or if you need additional support in helping that person in that role. But the idea is that it is a vulnerable process both ways. So if someone comes to share, it takes quite a lot. And so what do we do with that information? Do we go and tell, as soon as the sister leaves the center, do we go and tell everybody? No, we're not supposed to do that, right? So whoever comes to us, it's important to realize that this is a very vulnerable space. And we want to make it as safe as possible for that person. If you were to reach out for someone, to someone, would you want that to be a safe space? Yeah? And I think we are all well equipped to create safe spaces for each other and for ourselves. So you are not doing it alone. First of all, Baba is working through all of us. And we do have a very special family that is always there to support. even if some challenge come up, don't give up. Someone will always be there to help you or help that soul.
So to clarify with you, Sister Roma, I'm hearing you say that we all are equipped to be open, caring, and receptive. And I think it's important to say we don't have to have the answer for that other soul. But we're there to be receptive and supportive and to listen. And so listening with our heart, being kind, and walking along with that person for a moment, whether it's to connect them with somebody that has some skills, or to just be a friend. And I loved what you said, Pam, about friendship. And so does that mean right now this person's chosen me as their friend, and as their friend, that's I'm the confidant right now. And then if the issue that soul's dealing with is too big, then what? And I think that's where you said helping navigate, whether that's within the Brahmin family or helping that person get connected to a doctor, a counselor, a family member that might be able to help.
Yeah, I was thinking, because I've got a creative mind, I was thinking of all the things that maybe we shouldn't say as well, like, you know, oh my God, really? Oh, and then we share that with somebody else, or, you know, we send them into Bubba's room or give gyan, because obviously the gyan hasn't worked at that point, you know, because that would have solved the problem. So I think it's really important, if I myself can't manage that, that I say, oh, thank you so much for sharing. I think maybe you need to speak to somebody who might understand what you're going through. You know what I mean? So, and the other thing is, I heard someone say a Brahmin secret is when you just tell one person and then they tell somebody else and they tell somebody else. You know, and the last thing we want to do is to shame anyone, because this is one of my things that I discover in most Brahmins who come, who've really taken so much courage to even ring me, and they've maybe waited a year before they rang, is this energy of shame. And I want to just say something about this, because, you know, some of the Murli, the way the Murli is spoken, the old Murlis, were spoken in Pakistan, you know, a really long time ago to a very different group of people. You know, Baba was really talking in a language that my grandfather was talking in. And also, a lot of the women in those days were really under a lot of pressure from their husbands to just to be sexual slaves in a way. So a lot of the talk about lust and all of that, it was a very direct language to try and, I guess, save those women as well, to give those women freedom. Baba was a feminist. He was one of the earliest male feminists in the world. Not everyone will agree with me on that comment, but I do believe he liberated women, gave them autonomy. So he used a very strong language. And I, in this day and age, if I sit in with a Sakal Murli and I listen to that language, I have to be a little bit like an anthropologist and think about the time and try and understand a non-shaming language. Because sometimes that shame really colours our whole life. And I know that people feel ashamed if they have dark secrets inside of themselves that they feel ashamed to talk about. And I really don't feel anyone needs to be ashamed for being a human being and having experience. And that really touches me deeply, that Brahmins suffer a lot from shame. So I speak that to all of us and whoever's listening out there. Chuck shame out the door and really start to discover ways of understanding those feelings that make us feel shady and dark, right? So that's one thing I wanted to say. Shame is... acceptance is... yeah. And rejection, yeah.
So thank you, Sister Mary Jean, Dr. Sarah, Sister Pamela, and Sister Roma for sharing that. I know we've been surfacing interesting topics which we didn't discuss perhaps years back, but as the situation changes and our community in the Brahmin family is evolving, it's really very important to have safe spaces where we could discuss matters like this. I think many of you are still interested to listen more, but in the interest of time, we won't be able to extend, but we will have a follow-up session perhaps by Wednesday, so we'll just need to wait for the announcements. We're also very lucky today. We're blessed by Baba's kindness that we have a brother from Shantivan who is a member of the education and business wing. We would like to call Brother Hitesh to give us some words of insight. Brother Hitesh is a mental health advocate. He's also a certified counselor, I believe. And let's all give our round of applause to recognize Brother Hitesh. So Brother Hitesh will give us about 5 minutes or so of his insights as well on mental health, because this is the family up in the mountain. He comes from our family down below. So welcome, dear brother.
Om Shanti. Thank you so much for having me. And I was listening to such a wonderful talk and some great insight, and I was able to resonate to each and every point. And yesterday I was having a walk in Shantivan with one brother. He's very senior. And you know, while walking, he started sharing few things, like, you know, he was not at very good mental health, and he was able to share with me the things he's facing and how to deal with that. He was asking me, and you know, after the discussion, he said that, "I know you will not share with anyone, that's why I have shared with you." He was very, very apprehensive, fearful that, you know, if I share these, you know, vulnerable, sensitive things with some other person, some other brother, they might share with their seniors for their own, you know, benefit or something. So at that point, like we all are talking about the safe spaces, so few months ago, I had a touching with Baba, and I started this safe space online because, like you all have shared that, I just want to emphasize on this that it's very important to be genuine, and it's very important to be honest. Like we all shared about the connections, the relationships. We all have blind spots. We are unaware about many of our habits, our behavior, our, you know, unconscious part. And we need someone, you know, who can, with love, but who can share with us that, you know, why are you doing this? You might be wrong here. Maybe you are having a body consciousness here. Or just asking that, what do you think? Why are you doing this? Because you know, it gets very difficult to take suggestions, take feedbacks that, you know, maybe I might be wrong, right? After so many years in Gyan, that subtle, you know, spiritual ego comes that, how can I be wrong? But we need those four or five friends who can talk to us that, why are you doing this? There is something, you know, improvement you can do. So so what I do in that safe space, I ask people question and to be vulnerable, like we all are sharing. And I remember one of our BK brother, he faced many, you know, the habits, like we are talking about lust. So he shared a very long message, and it was very sensitive. So he messaged me first. He said, "Brother, can I share this? It's very sensitive." And quite frankly, I will tell you that my first response was, in my mind, it was, "No, don't share it. It's too sensitive. But the name of the group was itself the safe space. So I thought again and I said, no, let's do it, because, you know, if you will share, this can inspire others. So he shared, and yes, exactly the same thing happened. So many likes, so many replies he got, that it's very brave of you to, you know, share all these things, being very vulnerable. So yes, we need to be, you know, very vulnerable. We need the bravery. The brave thing is to ask for help. Like sister Sarah said, that, you know, we have to unpack what Baba is saying to us. So we all have an aim to be a perfect meditator, and, you know, Achal Adol, being, you know, stable in all the situations. But that is our aim, right? We are not there yet. It is going to take some ups and downs, and we need to accept it, and we need to be very open-minded. We need to find our blind spots, and for that we need some people, you know, who can be blunt with us, who can, you know, tell us exactly, you know, this is what you are doing wrong. So online I'm trying to do, offline also, you know, the seed is there. I also want to share and talk with you that how can we do it in Madhuban, or any person who wants to, you know, be in that safe space, be relieved that, you know, those things which the person is going to share is will not go outside. It will stay here only. So thank you so much for having me. It was a wonderful session. Om Shanti.
So I think this is definitely a conversation that needs more unpacking. And so as Brother Francis mentioned, we'll try and incorporate some extra sessions, and maybe where we can gain practical tools and more insights into some of the specific things that these lovely souls have shared. And so thank you all. And I think I really appreciated the honesty and you sharing your personal stories. And I got a sense for myself, is it's okay, you know, to be able to acknowledge and say it's okay, but also take that step to receive the help that's needed. So thank you all very much for sharing. And we'll share more in the program. Thank you.